Welcome to the Futile Podcast. Tonight, we got Zach Newkirk, Ian Strope, the founding members.
How's it going?
Classic. Just put some down in celebration of this being, I don't know, the 208th podcast, let's just say. I don't know, something like that. Anniversary issue. Come to think of it, it's probably pretty close to the actual anniversary of our first recording. I think we would have done it in the beginning of 07, maybe? Or did we do some before Christmas break?
I don't remember.
Because I was working on that movie. We were in that same class together, and I went and worked on that movie and disappeared for a month. Then I came back. I think we started, it was the following semester, with the film theory class or whatever, maybe. Or no, that was, well, anyway. Yeah, it was. I think it was March or something that we started.
It was one of those, yeah.
And this is February, which I should probably never say because who knows when I'll get around to posting this. Yeah. But we got a couple, we got a handful of backlog movies we can discuss, varying degrees of which one of us have seen it and what sort of opinions we have. But let's just do old business. Old business. How you doing? How's life? How's the situation? How's the... You can't just say that now because what an asshole to take that away from everybody.
The situation?
Yeah.
From
really? I mean, like, you can't...
New Jersey Shore or whatever.
Yeah, which isn't going to be in New Jersey when they do a second...
The Hamptons or something.
They're going to lose so much money on that second season.
How do you think?
Because I think people will watch it, but it will just slowly... I think that the hammer's going to drop on all that crap. And people are going to be, like, wanting... They're going to be wanting different stuff in their entertainment because it's going to get really dark here. It's going to get really depressing in real life and everything. And I think seeing vapid people on the at their wit's end because their wit is so infinitesimal, just kind of be around with each other and mess around and create drama is not going to, it's not going to be entertaining. It's just going to be like, you know what? I don't need the stress in my entertainment. I mean, I don't know. We'll see. Maybe screwball comedy will be big. Maybe, like, guy that's a lawyer and girl that's a lawyer and snow leopard that's not a lawyer teamed up in a New York penthouse will be the kind of movies that are popular for a while. You know?
No.
No?
It's
no?
It's all
hangover copies?
It's all high concept
it's
stuff
all,
right now.
It's all like Bradley
hot
Cooper.
Hot Tub Time Machine.
Oh, Hot Tub Time Machine.
The big push now, even though there have been such movies made as... Tropic Thunder and Hot Fuzz recently. The big push now is to make something as utterly simple and cheap as possible. The Hangover, I don't think, was cheap, but...
Probably should have been, but it wasn't, huh?
So what's the theme for this one, Ian? Hit me with it.
Yeah, theme? We could do Bleak for the sake of Bleak and talk about The Road. Have you seen The Road?
I haven't seen The Road.
Okay.
There's a lot of things one thing I'd actually like to see this weekend is... if it's still playing at the minor, is an Education.
Hmm.
Which, from what the people are saying, is a likely Oscar winner for a lot of the big categories.
Possibly.
And anything that's a likely Oscar winner in my book is good to go over Avatar. I'll take any comers.
I hear that. Comers. Any squirters, anything.
Anything. Speaking of that, one of the guys from... Xavier Renegade Angel and Wonder Chosen.
Mm-hmm.
Forget the guy's name now. But PFFR is their
production company. Yeah.
And he also writes for South Park and stuff. And he heard of this great thing. This sounds fantastic to me. He heard of this great thing where some friend of his told him of a site, and things always start like that. A friend of mine told him about this porn site. But his friend actually told him about this porn site where... you send them money, and you send them a script, and they shoot what you want the porn movie to be. So he said, this is an awesome idea. So he sent them this script he wrote full of philosophical and avant-garde stuff, and no nudity and no sex, and had these porn people make it. And he sent it to four different groups to make the four different parts of it, to make like a full-length film. And I forget what it's called. But it sounds awesome. Like
you have to pay for it? I mean, how does this work? I mean,
you pay them. You pay them like $900,
uh-huh.
And they make the it's a fetishist site
or something. Exactly.
Like anything you want them to do, they'll do.
That's pretty smart.
And so anyway, so he just had them film movie that he wrote.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous and, like, totally, like, intellectual, philosophical, but like, in a really stupid way.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
Well, he gets that all that's very stupid, I think.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, if you've seen Xavier,
then
you get it.
And, but it's funny because he... I saw a little clip of a few things, and one of them was, these really untrained porn actors, holding a piece of meat and saying, looks like Gregor Samsa was right after all. Like, things that they probably don't even know what they're saying, you know? Like, it looked hilarious. It looked really awesome.
Oh, my gosh. Is this going to be, like, the next Room, sort of, in terms of just, like, it's intentionally funny, but it's done by proxy almost?
No, it was funny. So I was reading an interview with him, and he said he really thinks of it as art now because the filmmakers were so poor and the acting was so poor that, like, it becomes this amazing new thing. Like,
yeah.
Because... jokes. Like
Herzog's liked to work with non-actors and stuff for a while. I mean, working with non-actors.
For drama, for something that's like kind of off-the-wall comedy that's not, like, you know, overtly funny.
Mm-hmm. The best kind.
That's weird. I don't know. I thought that was an interesting idea. I'd never heard of it before.
That might fit the Bleak theme just perfectly. That's what we've come to at this point. We're just literally...
It sounded pretty bleak.
But funny, too. You know, it is what it is, I guess. Anyway, I guess I could just do a quick down and dirty on the road. It's post-apocalyptic. It's damn near monochromatic. And it's a little bit...
Would you say it's bleak?
Of that. Well, it's a little bit of that. I don't know what you call that. Cormac McCarthy, No Country for Old Men, sort of philosophical. But it's not, like, philosophical. You know, it's just kind of like there's voiceover and stuff. Yeah, there's a minimalism to it, but there's sort of a gritty masculinity to it, I guess. I mean, like, that's a No Country for Old Men, obviously, right?
Sure.
And it's in this, too, to a degree. I mean, it's really just a father-son road trip of sorts. And, I mean, the big conceit
of... Is there a part in Bidding where they look at each other and go, road trip!
Road trip! Yeah! And then they high-five and freeze frame? No. There's very little levity in it. And that's kind of one of its failings. I mean,
I'm surprised there's any levity in it.
Well, I mean, there's minor moments when things are not as bad, and but the whole time, and that's, like I said, that's part of the contrivance of it, is that it's or the conceit is that it's so bleak, sort of inexplicably bleak. Basically, what you get is something happens, flashes in the sky. Now it's nuclear winter, I guess. Mm-hmm. All the animals have died. Everything is dying. You hear these crackling sounds of just trees collapsing all the time. It's all, like, in the woods. It all just looks like it was shot very rural. And they're on their way from, like, the Midwest or something to the ocean. There's some sense that if you get to the ocean and then go south, maybe climates will be better. Maybe there will be something that's still around. But because you have no sense of what caused the apocalypse or whatever, it feels like it honestly could be something, you know, supernatural, something biblical, or because it's just, there's all the animals are dead.
Right.
Things are just, you know, boats are just tipped over. And I mean, it part of it just looks like it just happened, because they'll walk through towns and, you know, there'll be, like, car crashes that just happened and things that just, so it's strange like that. I mean, I guess it's really just, it's just a backdrop to set this father-son story up, I guess. I mean, so it moves along, and some, you know, they get into some scrapes with, you know, the cannibals and all that. There's a couple, basically all the people they run into are, for the most part, psychotic, deranged, like, you know, rapist, cannibalist gangs.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a wife. His wife is in it for a bit, and they kind of do flashbacks to explain what happens with her and what happens with her.
Charlie.
Yeah. Charlie just decides to bail one day, which is kind of inexplicable, the rationale for that. I mean, she just kind of takes off some of her coats and just goes out into the darkness, and I guess
she freezes
to death. It could be called the coats.
It's a movie about future Pong. The beginning of Future Pong. She freezes in place, and then one day people are playing Future Pong, and she's an out-of-bounds marker.
Uh-huh. It's crazy.
I like it.
So, I don't know. It was, like I said, the problem with a movie like that is that, yeah, you say it was bleak, and then someone says, well, what was it really about? What really happened? And you're like, well, it was about what would happen if things were just like that.
So let me ask you something.
So it has a feeling, but it doesn't really have much in the way of, like, a narrative or an arc. There's a journey, but then it doesn't matter when they get there.
I know the book.
Yeah.
And that all applies to the book as well. But but it works because I don't know, because it's writing.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you this. Do you think it... Have you read any McCarthy at all?
All the Pretty Horses.
Okay. So... Do you think that this was more McCarthy-ish, or do you think it was more John Hillcoat who directed The Proposition, which is also very bleak, one of the more bleak Westerns
I've ever seen? Okay, that I did not know that part. Hillcoat,
this is his second movie.
Proposition, yeah. Yes. It does have a feel like that, like that's this guy's spin. I have not read the book, so I couldn't say. I could say that it has a sort of tacked-on pseudo happy as it possibly could be kind of ending, which
that's how it happens in that.
In the book? Okay. Yeah. But
it's hopeful. I wouldn't call it happy.
Well, it's slightly hopeful, but it's still just as bleak. It's more like a delay of the inevitable. Because I mean, if there's no animals and there's no way to grow anything.
Well, the idea is I think the question is if there's any good in people, and these people think they're the only two good people left on Earth. There might be some more good people.
There might be, yeah. And you know that theme is, I would say, not explored well enough in this story to give me a real thing to grab onto.
That's the theme of the book. So.
Yeah. It's more like there's a lot of just. There's anxiety and fear, and then just a general kind of trudging forward. There's a trudging forward, and there's a father's protection of his son, who he sees as sort of like, if he can protect his son, if he can keep his son alive for however long, then they make it to the ocean, then, you know, then it's almost like a spiritual journey for him or something. Sure. I mean, that sort of stuff is hinted at, you know, it's like to him, his son is God or something, he says. But they really don't get too far into it, so it...
Does he say, mother is the word for God on the...
Yeah, you know, it's none of the crow-esque dialogue there. No crow-2-esque dialogue. Iggy Pop doesn't pop in and say, yeah. Spider monkey's a fucking crispy critter, or anything like that.
Old Iggy.
Iggy. So it's just... I like... sort of as those sorts of things. I like those post-apocalyptic stories when, but they need to have a little more to the theme. And I think it was weak on the theme. I don't really want to do too much with spoilers, but it's basically at a certain point you realize that the father character just to give it some tension. It's probably in the book too, but it's not explained as well in the movie. Is that he's ill. You don't really know. Has he got lung cancer? What, he's coughing blood?
He's got the black lung.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
There's a lot of soot in the air.
The canary died or the rabbit died or whatever. Well, first the rabbit dies, then the canary dies, I guess, following the story. And then so he just kind of, like, makes it as far as he can, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It's something versus something like Children of Men, mm-hmm. where it is very overwhelmingly bleak. But, I mean, the technique that they used to do some of those sequences, like the one in the car and stuff, it's just, it's cool, it's inventive. And then that sequence at the end.
The stylistic inventiveness makes up for, well, I don't know if it makes up. It
gives you something.
It salves over the bleakness.
It does. Plus, Children of Men also did have kind of a...
It ends with a hopeful thing as well.
It ends hopefully, but it also has a, like an action-driven theme, narrative, and a bit that connects to a theme that is kind of revisited slightly. Here or there. And it also is a little more connected to a rationale of a real world. This is just...
Well, this is something no one's experienced.
Yeah, but at the same time...
Children of Men is like, you know, anyone who lived in like, you know, has lived in like Sarajevo or...
Yeah.
Or me, for instance, in McKinleyville,
mm-hmm.
you understand the kind of...
The bleakness.
The strife.
Yeah, the strife.
The constant shelling of apartment complexes.
Uh-huh. But I think it's just...
Let me ask you this. How's the soundtrack, the music, the score? Nick Cave...
Oh, yeah, that's right, Nick Cave returned.
And he did Proposition as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with Warren Ellis.
Actually, and actually Warren Ellis did Road also. They both.
Yeah, it was the combo.
But Nick Cave also wrote Proposition.
That's right, I remember that. It's, pretty unremarkable, I would say. I mean, I'm not a big score guy. Like, you love the Dark Knight score, and I get that when I hear it, and it works. I think it works great. But for the most part, I would say, unless it's super bombastic, so James Horner...
in the Dark Knight, you would have been just as moved if Paula Abdul was playing the whole time?
No, no. There's a difference between, like, songs being used in a movie and then just some kind of a score.
So, the score to Nightmare Before Christmas, what if that had been played during the Dark Knight?
That would have offset. Or how about, what if the score to Batman 1989 was playing in Batman Begins? No, you're right. New king in town!
You heard the Prince song for the Minnesota Vikings, right?
I don't think
he wrote a fight song, Minnesota Vikings, before they played the Saints in the championship game.
Uh-oh.
And it was the most morose, completely inappropriate song for a football
game. It was like totally Prince, though?
It was pretty Prince. It was disgusting, though. It was horrifying.
Oh, wow. That sounds cool.
It's a good cultural joke at this point.
Great.
So what do you give this movie, The Road?
I would give it...
Did it get nominated for anything?
I don't think it did. I think it just kind of was unremarkable. That's the problem, is it's unremarkable. It's hard to give a bad rating to a movie that, for what it does well, but it just doesn't do that
nothing
much.
Nothing in the Oscars. Got nominated for a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah, I would give
it a... Cinematography, mostly.
I don't even know.
It won cinematography, won Best Actor at the Utah Film Critics, which who cares?
I like it when something is consistent in terms of its look and its feel, and it does that. So, you know, you don't doubt the world, you just are confused about the way the world came to be. And for me, I'm one of those people, I get nitpicky about that sort of stuff.
That's the point, though. It's unspecified.
It's supposed to set the backdrop for a bleak world, and then, okay, what's the theme you're going to color this world with? And then it's like, well, we're just going to move along with the bleakness. I guess it felt long that way in that sense and everything. I would give it a 2.5 out of 5.
That low.
Because it's really like I watched it and I thought, okay, it conveys a solid feeling of, you know, the bleakness. But in the end, it's just kind of... I don't know. There wasn't a lot of meat to it.
Okay.
Not enough meat. It may be worth a second viewing. I don't know.
Ryan told me he watched it last time. He seemed to really like it. He thought it was just as bleak as you, but he really enjoyed it.
Okay, well, I can talk to him and see what... He might have gotten something better out of it than I did. I don't know, I'm going to formula a lot more in my reviewing, which, you know, is weird, because I usually, as I'm watching a movie, I'm like, oh God, I can't. I really can't wait to get through the inevitable part in the second act where they end up somewhere and things are good for a while and then it gets raided by bad people and then things turn bad again or whatever, you know?
Do you not agree that the formula is necessary?
No, I think that it is necessary in some cases. I mean, like, at the very least, they could have been more explicit with the theme. If they had done more with that, which they do a little bit more towards the end...
So you want them to hit you over the head with it?
I want them to tap me lightly on the shoulder instead of just kind of whisper from about 20 feet away.
Theme.
They're like, hey, we don't think people are good. And instead just be like, hey, yeah, you know, most of these people are terrible. But why would... I mean, because here's the thing, because you don't know what caused this or what the nature of it is. There's a sense of, yes, people are trying to survive. But this ideology behind... Well, what happens when things go bad? Everyone goes against each other and becomes marauding gangs of psychopathic murderer rapists. Seems inconsistent. Like, is that really the best way for society to work? Because first off, how do they come together? So it's like, oh, well, you and I, yeah, we both can high five over the idea of murdering children and then, you know, raping their corpses, right? So we'll always help each other out.
Is it large groups?
At one point, there is a good group of people with, like, the giant dune buggy. It's awesome. It's like from Ice Pirates, Mad Max stuff. And apparently they're all, like, you know, creepy people.
There's no
women in the group. It's just a bunch of dudes.
It's okay to question whether or not that could happen? Here's the thing.
No, I just think that's all we're presented with up until the very end. And so it feels like a cop-out ending rather than trying to give us if there is other people. I mean, there's an old guy at one point where they talk to him and he's kind of harmless. And I don't know if there's maybe something there in that conversation they have. I didn't get a lot from it. But I don't know. I mean, it's just like there's more struggle when there's a sense of, like, stakes. And the thing is with this movie, it's like the stakes are already gone. I mean, basically 10 minutes into the movie, they show him showing his son, like, you know, you put it in your mouth and then you just pull the trigger, you know, like if we're pretty much there at any point, we could just kill ourselves. So why are we moving forward?
They keep the one bullet in the gun thing?
Yeah, the two bullets, yeah. And then he has to use one at one point.
So I got to tell you this. The book was in the Oprah Book Club, so I think you're wrong.
I don't know about anything about what goes into choosing those books, or if she has guest authors choose them and they just pick based on politics or what.
Book of the Year things.
Oh, I'm sure. I can't review the book.
One of the great. That's the thing is, it sounds very similar. Like they really didn't do it. They probably did some truncating.
It sounds like they just didn't hammer the theme as well as they. Like I said, with literature, they probably could do more with that.
But McCarthy doesn't ever.
How is it written? Is it written from the viewpoint of the father?
Like Hemingway wrote it.
Okay.
It's like the man said this and the kid did this.
Yeah.
And then they walked here and then there was a.
Well, as a Hemingway story type thing, I could get behind it a little more. Maybe I just think as a movie, it.
It's minimalist. That's what he writes. I mean, that's
yeah. But it, I could get behind that in No Country for Old Men because you could kind of get those themes and see those things played out. But
one thing about McCarthy, I think it's interesting, is that he's widely considered like the greatest living American author right now. The interesting thing is, if he doesn't just tell you what his theme or thesis is in the title, which he pretty much does, He makes it very clear or apparent either at the beginning or at the end, and he's not one of those people who is trying to load the text with things for you to rip apart and check academically and figure out how you can analyze it. And what's weird to me is that it's so universally lauded, because that's rad to me. That's awesome that a writer would just be like, you know what? I'm just going to put the point of No Country for Old Men in the title. And then someone will reiterate that at the very end of it. And it'll be about the world passing by certain people and how things change and crime and stuff. And that'll be my point. Wham, there it is. And then he makes this thing. People are like, oh my gosh, that's so brilliant. But that's simple. And then all he had to do was write a story.
Yeah, but that's the thing. In this case, and I have not read the book, so I can't criticize the story of
the book too.
But in No Country for Old Men, yeah, boom, the title, No Country for Old Men. It's like a science. It's like an academic paper, like an essay. You know, it really is. It says, sure, I'm going to set out to do this in the first paragraph, and then it elucidates that through, you know, through dealing with situations or whatnot, you know? Oh. I mean, this happens to the guy. This happens to the guy. This happens to the guy. You know, he chooses to go out and, you know, he decides to go bring the guy water when it's probably already dead, but, you know, for whatever reason. He decides not to accept help from the police. He, you know, all these things, these choices happen and this narrative structure happens to you know, elucidate that theme, to give you, you know, to give you stop food for thought on that idea. You can't just say something and then put in a story and then not have elements in the story that, you know, are playing on that theme. I mean, if the theme is no matter how hard you try, you don't always win, life's not fair, then you know, that's basically the story for 90% of most stories, but now tell a story where that's what happens. Now, if the story is just a guy's a loser the whole time and doesn't do anything anyway, then you're going to be like, well, I guess, but it seems like a trivial story to put there. It's like one note. It's like dung. Minimalist, you're right. But minimalism can also have sort of a weird, you know, way where you can make minimalism, you can still make it work and make it more vibrant and dynamic, I guess. And to me, this just didn't quite pull it off. In this particular case, for this particular movie. Mm-hmm. That's why I'd give it a 2.5. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, you know, failure as a theme is not really what this is about. I mean, it's more about just sort of, are there good people, are there bad people? I mean, yeah, I guess that's what it was.
So 2.5.
2.5. Okay. And, yeah. So, yeah, if you want to listen to more Futile podcasts, check us on iTunes. Go to iTunes and type in Futile Podcast and then give us a rating in stars. It's out of 5, so remember, it's out of 5. Give us a 5. It's out of 5. And you can write us a little review.
Do you just kind of subliminally say,
I think somebody did that, yeah. I don't think it was me. And then listen and send us emails, futilepodcast@gmail.com. Take it easy. Like the shameless widow doffed her weeds.
The stars all winked at me. They shamed each other.
Future Pong is an invention of, what was it, you and?
I want to say Ryan and maybe Mark.
Mark, yeah.
I think that was the idea. Like, me and Mark started hitting it against the wall.
Yeah.
And then I called Ryan in, and I was like, look at this. You need to look at this.
You need to look at this.
We hit it off the wall. You need to see this. And then as we were doing that, rules started
appearing. Of course, yeah.
And, yeah, I'll say it was probably more at the get-go, me and Mark. It was, like, story by Mark mm-hmm. and Zach, and then after that it was, like, written by
Ryan
and Zach, maybe.
Well, if you'd like a transcript of the rules to Future Pong, you can send us an email at futilepodcast@gmail.com. Anyway,
don't hit coats.
Yeah, don't hit the coats.
You have to play with your bad hand.